This is the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast, and this particular episode, we are talking exclusively about the 2010s. That's right, because we are technically off this week, so we're going to have a little flashback to an episode where myself, Aaron Peterson, John Davenport, and Amanda Sink talked about 2010 through 2019. Most importantly, what the best films and television shows we saw during that time were, as well as what listeners decided were the most important movies and TV shows from that decade. We're halfway through this decade. It's time to reflect, so we're just going to roll on into it. This is The Hollywood Outsider. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron.
Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Now, here's how we're going to do it. We are going to go through our top, each of our top 10 lists. That's why this show is exclusively 2010s. We're not adding anything else to it because it's going to take some time. We're going to go through our top 10 movies and our top 10 TV shows. But before we get there, you guys want to know what the top movie was for each year, 2010 through 2019?
Yeah.
Go for it.
2010, Avatar, number one.
Weird.
People at the time.
I know.
Movie.
Still weird.
I still don't know why we need four sequels, but whatever. next year, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows 2.
Yes.
The next year, The Avengers. Then Iron Man 3. There's going to be a lot of Marvel and Star Wars in this list. All right. And from Iron Man 3, we go to The Hunger Games, Catching Fire. That's when Jennifer Lawrence was getting rich. Next year, Star Wars, Force Awakens. The next year, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. The next year, Star Wars, The Last Jedi. The next year, Black Panther. The next year, Avengers Endgame. That's so much Disney. Really, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the top 10 movies in the last decade were Disney's.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know what? So let's get into ours. We're going to do this round robin. What that means is we're going to do number 10. Each circle around, do number 9, each circle around, so on and so forth. Now, we don't want to go into like what every movie is about or anything else. Just tell us what your number 10 is and so on and so forth and why that movie made your list for the tops of the decade. And we're going to do this in the order of Amanda, John, myself. Amanda, start us off. Number 10.
My number 10 is Christopher Robin. Now, it may surprise you that
How is that only your number 10? That should be your number 1.
I know.
Did you see that and say, that's the greatest experience I've ever had in my entire life. I think I had a baby with it.
It's a 10.
I did give it a 10.
Okay.
Yep. And it still made my list. But you have to also consider that there are, on my list, there's a combination of movies I would consider a favorite and also movies I would consider the best for filmmaking purposes.
All right, let's stick with this one. Why this one? Where does this one go?
Christopher Robin just really found the magic of bringing those characters to life, built a really good story around them. It combined the live action with the animated characters, and it just felt so real to me, and it felt authentic to Winnie the Pooh. And I just remember that experience. I pretty much cried the entire movie. I mean, from like the beginning to the end. So it was an emotional experience for me. And it was also just what I think is one of the best iterations of Winnie the Pooh.
All right. I think John and I would both agree that we're a little disappointed that it's so far down your list.
I know. Yeah. And I started to preface that and you guys were like, how dare you?
I don't know, man. Your number 9 through 1 better be some serious.
They're good.
All right. John, you're up. Number 10.
My number 10 is Attack the Block. The movie introduced us to John Boyega. And the premise of it was simple, nice, and fun, and all built off this idea of the writer-director was a guy who got mugged one night by these street kids. And he thought, well, if we ever got invaded by aliens, these street kids are the only people who can survive. And that's what he tells
truth,
that story.
There's some truth to that. Oh, that's a good pick, man. That's interesting. My number 10 is Nightcrawler.
Ooh.
Mm.
That's, you know, I talked earlier about how celebrity has really soured for me, and I'm not exaggerating. Like, I just do not get enamored with celebrities unless your name's Kurt Russell anymore. This was a movie that took me by surprise. I didn't know really what to expect. And Jake Gyllenhaal, I knew what the character was, you know, this creepy, sleazy paparazzi guy who's willing to do anything, you know, just anything. And I mean sadistic, evil things to get ahead, just to make it in the world. And in his mind, everything works because, you know, I do believe those kinds of characters have to believe their motives. They have to believe they're the mm-hmm. good guy. And he does such an excellent job of selling that sickening son of a bitch. Even though you hate him, and I mean you hate him, you almost kind of root for him. Or I'm fascinated by him. I don't know what it is, but there's something about that movie and the way it plays out that it captures what I like, kind of the essence of people obsessed with celebrity in a way. It kind of, to me, captures the essence of that. So every time I've watched that movie, and I've seen it several times since it came out, all I think about is this is how, and obviously nobody listened to this podcast. I'm talking about the weird ones, all right? They don't listen to that. The people that just get obsessed with celebrity and it's all about actors and fame and everything else, this is what I picture. And that's what that movie reminds me of. And it hit me on every level.
That's a strong pick.
It is.
Ooh, now we're getting good. Number 9, Amanda, what beats Christopher Robin? A perfect 10.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1.
All right, I'm listening.
This is the, let's see here, one of two Marvel movies on my list, which is surprising considering 7 out of the 10 in the last decade were considered the best. Mm-hmm. So I chose Guardians because that is the one that I feel has the best on all levels for me, where it connects with me the best. It's got the amazing soundtrack. It's got an amazing cast. It has great visuals. It has an interesting story. The way that I could connect to really strange and peculiar characters like a raccoon. I mean, that to me shows the power of those voices and the power of the writing. So I was constantly laughing. I didn't expect to be so charmed by that movie. And that's why it makes my list.
Can I throw in on this one? It's not on my list, okay? But it mm-hmm. definitely would have made my top 20. And I have to say, you brought up Raccoon and Groot. Before that movie, can you remember another movie where you so completely bought into a digital character? Because I have this problem, and I know you guys have it at times, where you're watching a movie where you have a completely digitalized character, whatever that word is.
That word.
Thanks. And there's always a part of you, you know, like Jar Jar Binks, like, oh, it's not real. It's not real. That's not real. I could tell it's not real. I never had that problem at all with Guardians. The entire movie, I just loved the characters mm-hmm. so much. And it was so well done. And the voices were, you know, you talked about the voices. So that's, I just want to say that because that's the first time I can remember being wholly invested in the characters. Maybe Jurassic Park, I guess, but they didn't have a personality. And this is the first time a character with a personality.
No, I can't come up with one. I know there has to be some other movies that did it pretty well for me, but I do agree that they did a strong showing for those two characters and for a lot of the characters that were in that. So it is a great movie, and it would have made my top 20 as well.
And I think it's better than Christopher Robin, so I'm still with you.
All right.
Johnny, number 9.
You know what? Someone's going to really hate me for putting this in here, but Edge of Tomorrow, Live, Die, Repeat.
Who's going to hate you? It's a good movie.
Who stars in it again?
Oh, Amanda's going to hate you.
I don't hate you. No. I actually, that's not one of the movies that bothers me.
All right. Anywho, for me, it was a great idea of a story and a great way to tell the story. Sure, it's a little bit like Groundhog's Day with guns and aliens, but hey, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. And anytime I get a chance to sit down and watch it, I pick up a little bit of other things that I didn't pick up the first time, and it's just fun. It still holds the same amount of fun the first viewing as it does the 10th viewing, and that's why, to me, it belongs on my list.
Didn't they call it Live, Die, and Repeat now? Hasn't it got a new title?
Yeah, because Edge of Tomorrow was too weird for people.
Plus, you know, you have Emily Blunt, and she is solid.
The bitch! That's her character name. I'm not offending anyone. That is her character name. Leave me alone.
She was a badass in that, though.
She was, man. Right? She was kick ass. And I will say, I don't like Groundhog's Day. Yeah, hate me. Whatever. I like this movie.
Tom Cruise shows up and he's not your usual character. He's somebody who's designed to not be liked. He's kind of sniveling and conniving.
He's a coward.
He is a coward, and he grows into something that we are more common to see him play. And it's fun seeing that. It's fun seeing him be a coward.
Yes, it is. It was. And then, of course, by the end, though, he's got to be Tom Cruise.
Right.
My number nine. This is it's almost like an experience. So I was at South by Southwest, and if you're a longtime listener, you can guess one of probably three or four movies this could possibly be. It's not The Guest. That was number 11. I'm just letting you know. It's not that one. See, Amanda, that's how you do an honorable mention. So I went into this screening. I didn't know what this movie was. I just really had like 2 hours to kill, and I didn't know what to do. So I sat down, and the credits started rolling, and I'm like, what does MFA stand for?
I knew it.
Yeah. It was like Master of Fine Arts is what it stands for. But I'm like mother effing attitude. It could be that, you know, there's a lot of different things. And the movie is very much a genre film. And this is probably one of the few, nobody knows what it's about, but a girl gets raped and she goes on a revenge spree. And it's not so much, you know, it's a very genre movie in a lot of ways, but it's how Francesca Eastwood, the actress, how she handled dealing with her rape. And how humiliated she was after the fact. And it was a lot of these little things that I've seen many, many actors do in, you know, I've watched Law and Order SVU 1,000 times. So I've seen 1,000 actors play a rape victim. And only the accused has probably hit me as hard as this one did. So it was just one of those roles in movies that made me feel completely for this woman's plight and what she was doing. And by the end of it, it left me so emotionally invested that I was compelled to contact the writer and the director and have them on the podcast and interview them and talk about their movie. And even though I knew the movie was never going to be a big hit because it was just one of those cult genre flicks, I just was enamored with it. And I loved what they did with it. And I really just hoped more people would find it, which they didn't, but that's okay. I mean, it's still out there in the ether. And I hope people will hear this and maybe check it out.
Yeah, I'm really glad that made your list because it almost made mine.
I'm just glad I'm not the only one that loved it.
I almost added it to mine as well. And I remember taking your suggestion and watching it and feeling completely numb by the end of the movie because it's so uncomfortable in so many ways, but nothing is like the rape isn't over exaggerated. That's one of the things that makes these types of revenge films really hard and uncomfortable to sit through is when they sit on it for too long. And this one gave you basically just enough for you to understand why she's doing what she's doing and for you to connect with her, but still to feel uncomfortable with her decisions and to feel uncomfortable with the world that she's living in.
Yeah. It's an all around.
It's powerful.
It does. It actually has you sympathizing and not sympathizing, but at least empathizing with rapists as well, because it is looking at different sides through what she does. And yeah, it's an interesting film. It really is. All right, number eight.
Ah, so this one has been mentioned already.
Okay.
Nightcrawler.
Woo!
I watched this one, I don't know, what was it, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, Aaron? Because I was 2 years ago, maybe. Or maybe it was just last year. Maybe it was this year. It was
okay, we're out of time.
Yeah, come on.
It was whenever
this
I started
is a long
my
show, Amanda. We don't need to do
my
that.
Jake Gyllenhaal watch through, and so I watched this movie, and I didn't really have high expectations. Aaron talked it up, but when I sat through it, I was wow. What did I just watch? What am I watching? And you kind of spoke to Jake Gyllenhaal's character and how great he was. So I'm just going to leave it at that. I loved the movie. I thought it was great.
Awesome, awesome, John.
My number eight is Coherence. That movie was so great that there was an award at the end of each year called the Coherence Award.
That's true.
And, you know, it was a beautifully done little movie that was introduced to me by this podcast. Justin brought it to the show, and that's one of the first things I watched off of his request. And I really loved this movie. I bought it. Anytime it's another one of these where if I've run into somebody who hasn't seen it, I try to share it with them. It's a small but brilliantly done and so tightly expressed kind of movie that's just a nice little genre flick.
That's a great one. And I remember that Justin McCumber, for people that haven't listened for long, he passed away. He was one of our hosts for a long time and he passed away. But he hunted that director down as well to get an interview with him because he just absolutely loved that movie. And you're right. We named the award after that. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool.
That's so cool.
My number eight, Knives Out. Knives
what?
Out. Yeah.
Nice.
I really debated, does it make the list? I mean, it's so soon. It's so
I expected recent. It to be higher on your list.
I got some good stuff, Amanda. I'm just letting you know, like, I can legitimately explain everyone I have. And I will tell you, my number one surprised even me. So just be ready. Knives Out, you heard me review a couple weeks ago. It's just it's very me. Everything about it is what I love. It's got comedy, it's got drama, it's got murder, it's got mystery, and it's got an extremely well written script that is tight and cannot be picked apart. So I absolutely love that movie. And I've seen it twice, so it's not like I'm going off the first time, and I'm going to see it a third time, if my mom will ever feel better. So, Mom, if you're listening, feel better, because I want to see it again.
Oh.
All right, that's number... Now we are on to number seven. We're getting closer to the top five.
I went with John Wick for my number seven, the first one.
Why that one?
This... You know, the second one I watched on a plane, and so maybe that tainted my first experience of the second one, so it wasn't even a question. I contemplated the third one, though, because that one is really close for me.
These horses are shotguns, Amanda. That's important.
The third one, I mean, the first one just sets everything up on the platform that I never expected. I didn't truly realize what they were going to do and that a dog was going to die. So that just, I don't know, everything in that movie and that the way that it revived Keanu Reeves' career in such a dramatic way. I mean, we all knew that Keanu Reeves was talented, but not often do you see an actor kind of disappear and then come back with a really strong career again. Like, you don't usually get a second wave of a great career. And now Keanu Reeves is literally he's like a hologram on a barrel of hay in a SpongeBob movie because he's gained so much popularity because of his work on these films. And he was just so well suited for this role. I believed everything he did. He looked so smooth. I mean,
one of the best physical performers acting.
It's just everything in that movie was like, wow, damn, good for you. Like, that was a good movie. And he is John Wick to me. And when you can be the character and I can't see anyone else in that role, to me, that makes you perfect and that makes that movie phenomenal.
You know what cracks me up about that movie is that it loses you in the first 5 minutes with the killing of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
It brings you back in a few minutes later with the, I heard you punched my son. Well, sir, he killed John Wick's dog.
Mm.
Oh.
It's like, oh, hell is coming. Hell is coming with him.
Yeah, that scene is never, ever written that way. No one ever considers writing it that way. It's always like the big bombastic crime boss is like, well, whatever. This guy is just like, oh, and he hangs up the phone.
Yep.
That's it.
And he's mad at his son for it.
Absolutely. I would be too.
I mean, the way he handled it made me terrified of what John Wick is capable of because of the way that they handled the other characters. So that's a great point that you brought up too.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget being, once again, another South by Southwest. Please go to that film festival. It's fantastic. Lots of cool stuff happens. John Wick played there. I don't think it premiered there. I think it premiered at Sundance, but it was playing there. And you heard people like after that movie, I couldn't get into it. I really didn't want to. I was like, oh, Keanu Reeves is going to be an ass kicker. Okay, I saw Speed. And people were coming out of that movie and you heard them on the streets because that's just one of those festivals where everybody's telling them the movies to see, raving about this movie and how badass Keanu Reeves was. And people laughed. We're laughing at the people telling them to go see it. They're like, whatever, dude. Just whatever. I'm not going to go see a Keanu Reeves action movie. Fast forward, Everybody thinks Keanu Reeves could literally kill an army at this point.
I would believe it. If you told me that somebody, the United States just retired all of our military members and we just brought Keanu Reeves in, I would believe that he could take care of us.
He's like, why are you learning Russian? I got to go to Russia. Don't worry about it. Johnny, what's your number seven?
My number seven is Prisoners. You got Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes, great movie.
You got Hugh Jackman, and you got a nice little dark story about what happens to a family when something terrible happens to it. It's such a well-done story. The acting in it is amazing. Jake Gyllenhaal is doing the quirkiest he can to just to make a special character out of what he's doing. And then you've got Hugh Jackman playing so against any other type that he's ever played before, and it just works. Every bit of it works.
That was right on my list, right at the edge of my list. That's a film that should have been nominated for a bunch of stuff, and it wasn't. I'm still kind of mad about it. All right, number seven for me is going to be a harder sell than some of the other ones, okay? I've seen this movie now. When it came out, I believe I gave it an 850. I've seen it now at least 20 times in an era when I don't rewatch movies more than once anymore, unless a sequel's coming out, right? So obviously this movie has hit me in some way. There's a sequel. I don't like the sequel nearly as much. I do like it, but I don't like it nearly as much. But this movie has a character I love. I'm a big fan of the books. Has a score that I will never understand why it was not implemented into the sequel. Because it wasn't. Because the score is fantastic and it wasn't. And it just works from start to finish. And that's Jack Reacher. I realize some people are hearing that going, that's top 10 of the decade. Shut up, man. That's a great movie. And it gets better every time I watch it. I just can't stop smiling the entire time I watch it. Having little old Tom Cruise basically beating the shit out of these guys on the street is one of my favorite movie moments of the last decade. I just freaking love this movie. I hope I sold it.
It's a fun movie. I don't know if I'd ever put it on my list, but I can see why you would. And the book series is pretty fun. I've been listening to it. And yeah, I totally get the whole idea of like Tom Cruise, really? For this guy?
Yep. He's so good at it though. Like he really, really was. He really surprised me. And I've read the book. So I've read at least 10 of them. And he's not the character. I'll be the first to admit it. He is not Jack Reacher, but he makes this his own version of Jack Reacher, and it works. And it also has a mystery element, which I'm a big fan of, obviously. So, all right, number six.
All right. There's a few Tarantino films that have come out in this decade. And so selecting the one that I thought was the best proved to be a little bit more difficult, but only between two of them. And so I went with Django Unchained because that movie is able to do so many things that it shouldn't be able to do. And the power behind it, the performances. I mean, Tarantino is, as we can, I think, all agree, a master of sorts. And this movie just really, I think, changed the way that I saw this time in history. Not to even a better degree, but it also just made me so uncomfortable that I sat in thinking about those moments a lot deeper and how history was probably even more severe than this film was. And this is a Tarantino film. So that sat with me. And I just think that all of his films are really great. And selecting one is a little tough, but that's the one that I think deserves to be in the top 10.
Why is that bleep on that nag? Samuel L. Jackson is so awful in that movie and great. And Leonardo DiCaprio, I learned this in the documentary where I had the interview with Tara Wood. Please check it out. It's great. He cut his hand there's a scene where he cuts his hand and he's bleeding all over.
Yeah.
That actually happened. He did cut his hand and he just didn't break character. He didn't stop. He just kept going.
That's dedication.
It's insanity, but it's a great performance. And yeah, absolutely. That's a great pick. Great pick. It's not my favorite Tarantino of the decade, but it's a great pick. Johnny, number six.
All right. My number six, this one might be a little bit hard to sell, but I wanted to put at least one movie in here that scared the ever living crap out of me. And it's not something that happens all that often. It's not anything that I ever think is really possible these days. But this one was one that shook me to my core. And that's Gone Girl.
That's a great. I wish I would have had that on my list a little bit. It would have been a little higher, but yeah, good one.
Yeah, you know, you've got like one of the scariest characters that I've seen put on TV on any sort of film, which I can't remember her name right now, but she, Rosamund Pike, did an awesome job playing her. And then you have Ben Affleck being Ben Affleck and being very cool about it. It's and his schlong just hanging in that one scene.
Oh yeah, like, I've looked at the screen caps of that.
I mean, it's worth mentioning.
I've looked at the screen caps of that.
I have.
Wow.
All right. He is a built man, okay? I needed to verify for myself.
He's Batman, even down there.
He is. He's about to be some Batman.
I don't know what that
means. You know, it's... And after I saw that movie, it took me about a week to get over just how scary I thought Rosamund Pike's character was. It was... Amazing Amy was just terrifying to me, to the point where, like, at this time, like, there was a girl who used to work out at 5 a.m. at the gym that I worked out at. And I used to like sort of, you know, whenever she was working out, occasionally I'd, like, my eye would drift over and see what she was doing. And then Courtney came to work out with me one morning and she saw her and she's like, huh, she looks like amazing Amy from Gone Girl. And I was like, well, there goes that.
I don't know. I'd probably still give it a chance, you know, just see how this plays out. Technically, you know, it might work out. You don't know. Crazy loves crazy. That's a good pick. That's a great movie. And if you can go into it cold and not know how everything's going to fall, it's even better. Even better. My number six is Ex Machina.
Ooh, good pick.
Yeah, that is a movie. AI terrifies everyone, or it should. You know, even though we go ahead and just put our personal information all over the place now. We take Facebook quizzes and tell everybody who what our mom's maiden name is and what our pet's name was,
what city we were born in,
of course,
to get our astrological sign.
Exactly. These are all basic ways to get your personal information. And Ex Machina is taking a look at what happens if AI really goes too far. What happens if you have AI that is a beautiful robot and it can pass the Turing test, you know, that test to determine your consciousness, AI's consciousness, that it can learn and become human in a way. And it's a wonderful movie. It's a weird movie. And it's just something that I never expected to be as brilliant as it was. And Alex Garland wrote and directed this and made this film to the so well that there was actually a point where I questioned the main character. I'm like, maybe he's the robot. You know, it's just so well done. It really is just so well done. If you've never seen Ex Machina, find it and watch it. It's a brilliant movie.
I do totally remember thinking, oh my God, is this guy a robot too? I thought I was the only one who thought that.
Nope. I regret waiting so long to watch it.
You should have regretted that because it's a great movie. But there's so many great movies. I mean, just listen to our list. There's so many here. All right. We are now in the top five. Top five, Amanda. Number five.
This stresses me out. Okay. So number five.
Why does it stress you out? It's just a list.
I know, but I keep contemplating, like, well, I'm forgetting so many great ones. Well, I'm not forgetting, but I'm just not including so many great ones, and I'm running out of time to consider changing them. I'm not going to, though. So number five, Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Really?
Yes.
That's better than Christopher Robin? I don't even think so. Okay.
But think about the impact of that documentary. Now, I contemplated which was more...
Okay,
which was better between the documentary and then A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
No, it's a fantastic documentary. I agree.
It is. And you guys know that I love documentaries, yeah. So this may just be like, that's a genre I really am drawn to. But that documentary reinstilled some of the values of Fred Rogers to people that had not seen him in some time, to individuals who had never experienced Mr. Rogers, and to those of us who have never forgotten about him. It reminded us about the compassion, the kindness, the genuineness in our human nature, in our society, the potential for good, the amazing things that he did, and the psychology behind children and how to handle them, because we get so consumed in our day to day. I think parents, teachers, siblings, aunts, uncles, friends, everybody forgets that we were once a child too. And to talk to a child, to help them understand, it was so natural and it was just an absolute gift to Mr. Rogers. And that's something that I think should be cherished and we should be reminded of. And it left me with tears. And I think everybody in the theater was crying watching this documentary. And that's something that I have not experienced with a lot of documentaries. People don't typically sob because of them. And that's just speaks to the amount of impact this documentary and Mr. Rogers and his life have had on all of us. So.
All right. You won me over. Still, Christopher Robin, though, it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
John, what's your number five?
Yeah, you know, my number five is going to be my first foray into bringing up something that's Disney property, but it's Captain America Winter Soldier. Ooh. You know, I can't tell you how much I can't tell you enough how much I love that character. And though I love First Avenger a lot, Winter Soldier was the first one that kind of put him into a bit more of a grounded state, and I really appreciated it for that fact. Also, it was the first movie that the Russo brothers did, which here's a couple of guys who were just TV directors, and they all of a sudden get thrown into this mix of directing something for Marvel, and it turns out to be awesome. It's got the action, the punch, the stories, everything it needs, and it's done on a level in which I really appreciated.
I mean, I can't argue with that. That's a fantastic movie. Not as good as First Avenger, I agree with that, but Winter Soldier's damn close. It's right. Legitimately really, really close. So my next one, my number five, is not a fun movie. It's the only movie that I would say watch once, maybe twice, and then probably stay far away from it. And the reason is because it's so emotionally draining for me personally. And you know, earlier I explained how MFA kind of made you understand rape victims a little bit more. 12 Years a Slave helped me understand slavery a little bit more. And not that, look, I'm white. I get it. And I know what slavery is and I know how awful it was. And I've seen Roots, and Roots is a powerful film. It's how 12 Years a Slave brings you into the conundrum. It's how it takes place with a man who's already free. Solomon is a free man. He's living in his house. He's living a good life, and he gets taken and put into slavery. And it's a true story. And because it's told that way, I feel like it made it, I don't want to say more because that says that I wasn't empathetic before, but it puts you more in the shoes, I guess, of the character, because now you're going through that character's journey, because you go home and you're safe in your house, and this could happen to you. Where Roots takes place so long ago, you know, it's a lot different to put yourself in the character's shoes. And 12 Years a Slave made it so I feel like it was one of the most well done tellings of that particular moment in history, because it made it accessible for everyone. It wasn't just about the black experience. It was also about how this man was an innocent man, and how this is why everybody should sympathize. It doesn't matter what your color is. Everyone should sympathize, because everyone should have what he had at the beginning of that movie. Nobody should lose what he lost. And it's just so well done. And I can't even explain it, but it's one of the most emotionally draining experiences I've ever had watching a movie, and how Steve McQueen just focused on horrible moments in history and never, never pulled away. He made you sit there and watch them as they happen, and didn't give you the comfort of cutting away to a different scene, or the comfort of cutting to somebody's face. You had to watch as Solomon hung from a rope, or as one of the other characters was brutally tortured. You had to watch it, or you had to turn away. And at that point, that makes you feel even stronger about it. It's just, I think it's one of the most brilliantly made movies of the last decade, maybe of my lifetime.
That one almost made my list. And you're right. It's one of the more brilliant made movies. I really wanted to put it on my list, but it's one of these movies that I have a hard time telling anyone to go watch. And yeah, it is definitely that. Something where I feel like I watched it once. I don't ever need to see that again.
Yeah. And I get that. I mean, it's a hard movie to watch. Hard movie to watch. I'm emotional just thinking about it. All right, Amanda, number four.
Number four is Deadpool.
Woohoo! That's my number four, too. So this saves me a bit of talking.
Oh, cool. We'll go ahead and talk about why you picked Deadpool.
No, it's your pick. You talk about why you picked Deadpool.
Well, we'll share the time then. Right. I chose Deadpool because there is not a chance in the world after, no offense, after Green Lantern, that I would have thought that Ryan Reynolds had a chance with this.
That's true.
But all of the marketing behind this movie was brilliant. Ryan Reynolds was so creative. He just made this character his own. I talked about this for a previous movie in my top 10. When you as an actor can take a character and you own that, you become that character, and that's who we can see you as and nobody else. To me, that makes you perfect for that role, which makes the casting perfect. And everything he did made me laugh. It was an enjoyable movie. It's one that I can rewatch and rewatch and rewatch. It was cleverly put together. It was funny. The action was spectacular. Everything about that movie I enjoyed, and it made me want more of Deadpool, a character that I had not had the familiarity with. I'm not going to play that person who's like, oh, I knew all about Deadpool before the movie. No, I knew nothing. I knew zero. By the end of that movie, I was like, tell me more. Give me more. That's how great Deadpool was. And it's one that people did not stop talking about, and one that people of all ages wanted to see and shouldn't have seen. And I remember I had a customer come in and tell me about how, and this made me so happy and love this movie more. She's very, no offense, she's very religious, very conservative. So it was very shocking for her to take her children, who are like 11 years old, to go see this movie. And she told me about her horrible experience. And I was like, God, this movie is just so R-rated and great. I love it even more that it makes children and parents uncomfortable in watching it. So not that that sells the movie anymore, but it definitely gives me comfort that, like, they really held their R rating strong.
I love that movie, and love that it was leaked test footage, which I'm pretty sure was conveniently leaked, and it just played great. Ryan Reynolds, he just is Deadpool. I mean, that's who the dude is. And I did know the comic. So, I mean, I'm not just saying that. I actually knew the comic. Man, he was so good. So good. And that movie made it possible to get Logan's farewell told the right way, which also gives an extra a little bump. So, yeah, that's both our number four. John, is it your number four, too? Because that would make this sweet.
No, my number four is actually Avengers. And the reason why it's my number four is because it was everything I ever wanted to see out of a crossover movie, and it delivered every single promise it was supposed to deliver, and it was something that just showed us what the possibilities were when you have people at the helm who really cared about things that I cared about growing up. And yeah, that's why Avengers is my number four.
That's a great movie. Shwarma. Shwarma. I love that one. I wish Age of Ultron was even half as good as the first Avengers.
Yeah, no kidding. Especially because that's the one where they introduce Wanda.
Yep. Well, she's getting her own show now.
WandaVision! I know, I'm so excited for it.
That makes one of us. All right, so let's go to our top three. This is it, buds. This is our top three. I don't know why I said buds. I really apologize. So let's go. I guess, you know, I'm in Illinois and weed's going to be legal soon, I guess, is in the back of my mind.
Oh, boy.
Amanda, I don't touch weed. Amanda, no, top three. What's your number three?
This is going to shock all of you, I think.
Is it Christopher Robin? Because you can't do it twice. That would be weird.
No. And it's not Harry Potter either.
Okay.
Yep. It is Parasite.
Really?
Yes.
Why Parasite? Now, tread lightly, because that hasn't been out long and John and I have not seen it.
Yeah, and so I'm not going to talk to you too much about the story or anything, but I will say that
I did buy it, so I will be watching it soon,
though. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Maybe I can steal your digital code. I felt that movie was done in such a clever and unique way. It built tension in ways that I had not expected. It was worth a two-hour round-trip drive. The casting was perfect. The discomfort and the parallels that they present in that movie in such an obscure and shocking way. The twists and turns in that story were unbelievable and unexpected. And I just cannot say enough about how simple the movie seems on the surface until you really start to consider the content and the context within that story. It's truly brilliant if you genuinely think about it, if you spend the time and you consider it. And if you don't, if you just brush that away and you just take the movie for what it is, it's still a great movie. And so those, that combination of things, just to me, I had no expectation for this movie, and it just rose. And the longer I sat on it, the longer I thought about it, the more I felt that this deserved to be for sure within the top 10. And then the more that I considered my list, it landed at number 3.
All right. I can't wait to watch it.
It's one of those indie films that people don't feel that it's worth the experience until they watch it. And then they're like, wow, I should have watched this a lot sooner. A lot of people that have taken Aaron's advice about South by films, this is what I feel this is parallel to.
All right, Johnny, number 3.
All right, my number 3 is Looper.
Ooh.
That's a good movie.
It's a great movie.
It's got everything I liked at the time. I really loved Bruce Willis at the time. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, whatever the hell happened to him?
Boy, times have changed, huh? Where are those two?
Oh, my God. I really have. But it also has time traveling. And not only does it have time traveling, but it explains you the rules of time travel by going, shut up. That's it.
That's true.
It was just something that strapped you down and said, we're going to tell you a story. And if you try to figure out the time travel thing to it, we're going to mess with you about it. And it doesn't really matter as much as you think it does. So here you go. And I do appreciate a story that does that.
That was a fun movie.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah. Especially as you figure it out and you're like, oh, I get it.
This makes me want to rewatch a lot of movies.
A lot of movies. Yeah. A lot. My number 3, and I have to preface with, the first time I saw it was a 70mm print on Christmas Day with a lot of friends and family. It was a wonderful experience. But since then, I've watched it every single Christmas. I've watched the Netflix extended version that's the series, which you don't need to watch, just watch the movie. And I still frickin' love The Hateful Eight. It's my favorite Tarantino movie of the decade. Love Django. Really like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Love Hateful Eight. And I've liked it more the more I've watched it. And I've appreciated it more the more I watched it. The score is fantabulous. The cinematography is breathtaking. Mm-hmm. The Walton Goggins being Walton Goggins is just fantastic. You know, Samuel L. Jackson's always Samuel L. Jackson, but man, it just, the dialogue, just how everything is put together. I just love this movie, and it's become like an annual Christmas tradition for me. I have to watch it every year around Christmas, and I assume because I live where there's snow, and there's nothing but snow in this movie. So, just love it. Hateful Eight.
That is nice. One of the few movies that has an incredibly slow build that I feel comfortable in.
Well, see, I mean, I get what you're saying. I don't find it slow because I love the interactions between the characters.
Yeah, so it's very Western-y in terms of structure.
Sure is, and I love Westerns.
And I normally hate them, which is weird because I do like a lot of Tarantino and Eastwood films. But this one felt comfortable to me, and I don't know how else to phrase it, but it did a really great job of doing that. And so I think you...
I assume it's Kurt Russell. I mean, it's that glorious beard, the mane that he wears. I assume that's what it is. It really just brings out the...
Is that what it is for you?
Yeah, I just want to...
Were you like, which Kurt Russell film am I going to put on here?
I want to cuddle. I just want to nuzzle into his little beard. Even though he's kind of...
It's the computer one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the computer one. That's the one I like. Computer wears tennis shoes or whatever that was.
Yeah.
All right, number 2. We are finally at the top of the list. Number 2, Amanda.
Coco. That movie was beautiful. It was magical. Every time I watch it, and I've seen it a lot, I cry. I cry a lot. The sort of presence that it gave the Hispanic culture in Mexico and the Day of the Dead. I'm not going to try to say it in Spanish because it'll sound really bad and I don't want to slaughter it. But for them to give that representation and for it to be so widely accepted, to me, I think it just warmed my heart for that perspective. But the whole story was very beautiful. It was shocking. It was very grounded, though, in reality, as weird as it is, because it's so not in reality for so many of us. We don't, a lot of us, or at least here, don't believe in that. But it really gave an opportunity for those who do believe in it to have that expression, and done in one of the most creative ways that I think I've ever seen in a movie, because the art that was used is truly magnificent. And the story just, man, it gets my heart. I love it.
I liked it just as much when it was called The Book of Life, though.
Fair enough, but it wasn't as pretty.
No, I agree. The animation is much, much better in Pixar. Johnny, number two.
You know, I'm just going to stick with this whole animation feature and say my number two is How to Train Your Dragon.
Really?
Wow. Okay.
This one, and you know, a lot of my choices have to do with how they stuck with me over the decade and how they made me feel when I first watched them, and if that feeling still is there. I remember this whole experience explicitly because we were just getting back in the town from our annual Christmas trip. Everyone was telling us we had to go see Avatar. It was this great movie. It was supposed to be amazing and fantastic and great. And we go see Avatar, and it's just kind of like, okay, well, that just happened. And then a couple weeks later, and I'm sure time is a little bit different than what had actually happened, but it feels like a couple weeks later, we went and saw How to Train Your Dragon, and it felt like everything Avatar should have felt like. It had, as far as the use of flying and the use of animation and the use of just really sucking the viewer into a story, even though you have these 3D animated figures that don't look exactly like they're real. They look like cartoon characters. Everything about it was done in such a smart way, and the characters and the flying and everything about it was just something to experience, and it was just beautiful to look at the entire time. And that's why it's my number two.
All great reasons, man. All great reasons. My number two, you already talked about, The Avengers. It was a movie that brought most of my favorite characters together in one movie. And it's my favorite Avengers movie of all of them. I know people are going, Endgame, yeah, great. But Avengers really got me. I mean, I just really never thought I'd see that in my lifetime. And you brought it together in my lifetime, and I was in awe of it. So I just love it.
It's a good choice, and you're right. Endgame, everyone's going to be screaming Endgame, but really without Avengers, Endgame doesn't happen.
Exactly. That's kind of how I feel about it. So let's get to number one. This is your number one movie of the last decade. Decade, Amanda. What's the best?
I had such a hard time choosing a top 10, but the number one was the hardest and yet somehow the easiest. I kept going back to this movie and I kept thinking about how incredible it was. And just because it never left my mind for number one is why I think I selected it. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Really?
It was.
I am shocked.
Such an amazing experience. I did see it in IMAX, and seeing how they brought this character to life, seeing how they built this universe, the animation was so incredible. The soundtrack was bumping. It was alive. I felt like I wasn't watching an animated movie. I felt like I was watching real characters, and that I knew because I was so connected to them. The story was so... It was so Spider-Man in so many different ways and talked about Miles Morales' experience, but in so many other ways, it connected the audience to it, which I think speaks to the intention and the power of Spider-Man in general, and whatever iteration you take it from, is that it is somewhat placed where you can connect with it from your own personal life. That father-son connection for Miles was represented here, and he also had a mentor with his other spider friends. And the whole thing just overwhelmed me with excitement, with love, with just how astonishing that movie was. And I'm normally not like a, oh, the animation is so beautiful and the art is so incredible. That's usually Johnny's feat, right? But this movie, I could not stop picturing it. Since I've seen the movie a few times, it has not left my mind. I can still picture it. And I have a terrible memory, so I shouldn't be able to recap anything in my brain.
Amen, you do.
But I can remember actual scenes. I can remember like the way the characters are built and the way that they're, you know, put together. So that put it for number one for me.
It's a good source. Good choice. I like it.
I did too. That's a surprising one. I didn't expect that one.
Yeah.
Oh, John, number one, best movie of the decade.
When I was ordering these, this is the first one I put down as a movie that I thought was important for this decade for me. And it stayed in the number one spot, never moved, never changed. I never even considered moving it around, which shocks me because I have so many things on here that I absolutely adore. But this movie is a magical little piece of filmmaking that not many people have seen. And if they haven't, you really do need to go see it. And it's I Kill Giants. You know, it's such a powerful story. And, you know, we've mentioned it over the, you know, this decade, for me was a tough one because I did lose my mom, and this story skirts that subject line in a way. Mm-hmm. And it's a powerful story about how someone deals with, guilt and loss and all these feelings that they don't know how to deal with because they're just a girl who is trying to just learn how to be a person as well as trying to navigate these feelings that are way above what she's capable of doing. But she finds a way to cope, and it is an interesting way to cope, and how they tell that story is just a magical piece of filmmaking. And it's so great.
That's beautiful.
That's a really sweet pick.
Yeah. And I know it means a lot to you. So that's even, it's good that you have feelings now and again. I like that.
Yeah, I'll go back to not having feelings in a second.
That's a beautiful
pick. That's also really brave of you to share that story too. So
it was. I'm very proud of you.
You know, when Amanda says it, I kind of buy it. Now, see, when you say it.
I need to work on that. It's really my delivery, right? It just it comes across a little sarcastic.
So, I'm really proud of you. Wait for it.
Wait for it. All right, people, here's my number one. This is, how do I explain? Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for. The Greatest Showman is my favorite movie of the last decade. I was as shocked as probably some of you are. I walked into the movie not really wanting to see it. I love Hugh Jackman. I think Hugh Jackman is one of the most talented people in the world. I do. Didn't mean I wanted to see a musical. Didn't like Les Mis. Couldn't even make it through the whole movie. A lot of people love that movie. I'm not knocking it. I don't really like musicals very much, but Sweeney Todd is an exception, but that's really dark and morbid, and it shows that I have problems. So I went and saw The Greatest Showman, and I believe it was forecast to do nothing that weekend. I think it had like an $8 million opening weekend or something. It was just hideous opening weekend. And then it just kept going and going and going, and people kept going to see it, and it became a monster hit. And you know why? Because it's a goddamn magical movie with a fantastic soundtrack. And I've seen it over and over and over and over. And every time I watch it, I still smile. I realize it's not the real story of P.T. Barnum, and I don't give a shit. I still love this movie. And every time I think of the decade, every time I kept putting this list together and trying to figure out like, what movie is really like the best, like my favorite. There's so many great movies. Mad Max and Fury, you know, there's all this stuff where I'm like, this should be in my list. You know, I'm a critic. Mm-hmm. This should be in my list. No, The Greatest Showman always was in my head as this should be the best. This should be number one because I had so much fun every single time I've watched that movie with whoever I was watching it with. And I jogged that stupid soundtrack so many times. And I'm trying to sing Zac Efron songs on a trail. It's just weird. So yeah, The Greatest Showman's my number one.
That is an exceptional choice. And I'm so happy that it is on your list.
I was almost going to sing a song and just make it, this is the greatest hoe, but.
Oh, you should have. That would have been really cute.
I realized that it ruined the movie for everybody. And I don't really think that's necessary. Whew. My goodness, people. That is our top films of the decade.
Hey, before we move into the best TV shows of that decade, let's talk about Yellowstone Season 5, Part 2, which is now available on DVD and Blu-ray with over 2 hours of additional features. Generations of blood have led to this. That's right, this is the end of Yellowstone before it spins off into something else. Yellowstone Season 5 Part 2, you can own a piece of that legacy now on DVD and Blu-ray. So get after your copy before we get Rippin' Beth and a new spinoff, which is coming soon.
It's time for our top 10 TV series of the decade. And this is an important note. We voted unanimously before the show that we were only going to include shows that premiered in 2010 or after. That's why you're not going to see the Breaking Bad or The Office and stuff like that. Won't be part of this list because it has to premiere 2010 to 2019. Everybody clear?
Clear.
Yep.
That means no Parks and Rec, Amanda.
It's not on there.
Okay.
Oh, man. I would love to put it on there, though.
All right. So let's change the order a little bit. John, me, and then Amanda start at number 10. And we're going to try and be a little quicker, but we'll see what happens. And if yours was already named, you don't need to do a whole monologue.
Right. All right. So my number 10 is The Night Of. You have a great story about the American legal system and how it impacts people on different levels, especially people of color. And to me, it was such a riveting story, and it was such an unfortunate series of events that happened to the specific character. And if you have a chance to watch it, it's only one season, The Night Of.
I haven't seen that one. I've heard it's really good. See, now you guys included limited series. I didn't include any limited series on mine.
I don't think I have limited series on any of mine. I think I didn't choose them intentionally.
Oh.
I included this one because to me it was too hard to not include it as far as a TV show goes.
Hey, it's your list. You do whatever you want. It's your list.
Don't let him change things.
I wasn't trying
to
change anything. I was just making a statement. Oh, man, people. My number 10 is Barry. Barry came out of nowhere. Did not expect it to be as good as it was. Bill Hader surprised the hell out of me because I never thought of him as a great actor ever. Saturday Night Live, I thought he was funny. He's weird. That's why I also never watched Barry before, because I'm like, he never really struck me as an actor, just like this funny guy. And no, I never saw The Skeleton, whatever it was, with Kristen Wiig. So I finally sat down and watched Barry, and I was amazed at how great this was. And also, I don't like comedies very much. This is a great comedy. So I highly recommend it. Barry on HBO. Please check it out.
My number 10 is 13 Reasons Why.
That just missed mine. Good call.
Really?
Yeah.
So if you guys recall, when this television show was even announced, I was beyond ecstatic because I loved the book. And one of the things that I had talked about, like, that would make a perfect TV show because the book is set up for it, is that book. And that I would love for it to go chapter by chapter with each episode and or each cassette tape. And so they did it. They made it happen. And it was what I could have imagined and then some. And the way that they handled the majority of that first season in terms of the content, the way that they made sure to still put focus and spotlight on this conversation and making a conversation of suicide and prevention and working with organizations that specialize in that. To me, that showed that they were not just in this to try to make a piece of content. They were here to make an effort to connect with people who are struggling and don't have any resources or don't feel they have support. And to me, the show was brilliant and executed so well, and the casting was amazing. And beyond that, what they were trying to do with the show just meant a lot to me. So
it would have made my list if they would have stopped at season one. True story.
Yeah, I haven't. Yeah. Yeah. I would say.
It did stop at season one for me. And I do love that show. I think it is a great show. I don't think I need to watch anything further beyond season one because it introduced us to Catherine Langford, and she's just amazing.
She truly is.
She's great.
Now, speaking of things that are amazing, my number 9 is something that I had only limited knowledge of. I didn't know what it is coming out, and I saw all the previews to it. It's got a bunch of actors that it's got one actor that I really just love in anything he does, and that's The Boys.
No! That's my 9 too.
Oh, hey, we saved some time, guys.
Here we are in this era in which comic books are everywhere, and sometimes we just need a story about comic book heroes being bad and the people who punish them, and I'm all for that.
And it was so fun and engaging. I loved it.
I like Homelander. Is that wrong?
Yeah, it actually is. But he's easy to like, though. It's I get why he's easy to like. So at the same time, he's a monster.
Baby eyes. I'll never forget baby eyes. That's all I'm going to say about it. Baby eyes.
That was diabolical.
great pick. My number nine is, you know what? Take the drama out of it. Take the pain that it caused me as a fan. Lethal Weapon is just a show. You know, it filled that psych void for me. It filled that void of I need something mindless. And unfortunately, Hawaii Five-O wasn't on Hulu and it didn't come out in the 2010s. So I needed something to fill that void and of like a buddy comedy. And that's really what Lethal Weapon was. Now, granted, Clayne Crawford was gone after season two and Sean William Scott came on. He was great, too. He actually did a very good job. I was pleasantly surprised with him. But there was just something about, even though they obviously hated each other, Clayne Crawford and Damon Wayans were a great pair. They really, really worked together well. And I hated Damon Wayans at the beginning of the show. I just didn't think he was a good Murtaugh, but he won me over. As a person, I still don't like him because you hear all the behind the scenes stuff and he just doesn't feel like a nice guy. Feels like an egomaniac kind of thing.
He's a diva.
Yeah, very much a diva. But in terms of the characterizations on screen, he always brought it to the show. And he and Clayne Crawford as Riggs and Murtaugh just really worked. And Lethal Weapon was a lot of fun. I never really loved the action scenes. I never thought they were well shot. But I enjoyed the show so much, I didn't care. It was kind of like Psych. I just watched for the buddies. I just wanted to see what they would do that week. And Clayne Crawford was perfect at being maniacal and crazy one minute and emotionally a wreck the next. And I loved that.
Yeah, I really loved that show. And if I was able to stick with it after the loss of Clayne and what happened at the end, it would have probably made my list. But because it was something I eventually abandoned, it didn't get the chance to stay on.
Yeah, I get it. That's why 13 Reasons Why I didn't make mine.
Right.
Yeah, I wanted to select Lethal Weapon as well because it's such a great show and I have so much fun with it. And I watched it past when Clayne Crawford left, even though I was so mad. But the drama just kind of tainted that for me. I was like, ew, I don't want to touch that.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
So, but it's so good. I still rewatch episodes.
I do understand.
All right, so we're going to move on to number seven.
No,
now.
We're on number eight.
No, we are not, because Amanda's number eight was my number eight.
No, your number nine was her number nine. Now we're on number eight.
I can't count.
I know. That's what I'm trying to help. I'm trying to help you, John.
Wait, so then I am still on number eight then.
Yes, it's number eight. You're number
starting
eight.
Number eight.
It's number eight right now. We just did number
eight. Okay, so my number eight is great. I can't wait for the second season. It's about to air in a couple weeks. I loved the first season, and I loved everything about it. I loved the acting. I loved the act, what it looked like, and it's Lost in Space. Because the robot was great. Will Robinson, great. The fact that the mom was the one who, instead of like in the old school TV show, and even in the movie with William Hurt, like instead of it being the scientist being the dad being the guy who saves him, it's actually the mom who's doing it this time. And the dad's kind of like, well, I know how to shoot things. I just love this show. I love the family in it, and I can't wait for season two.
Did your wife ever tell you, your wife Courtney, she ever tell you that I told her I think the mom reminds me of her?
No.
She does. Like, completely. I've seen her in a couple other things, and she always reminds me of your wife, Molly Parker. Because she's in Deadwood, she's in a couple other things that are out there. And, yep.
That's kind of hot.
There's another actress that reminds me of her as well, but we won't get into all of this. But what is...
All right, what's number eight? For you, Amanda.
For you.
It's for me. Yeah. Well, yeah, see, you screwed me up because of like the other, you started, I didn't know.
You guys are all just messed up because of the order from the film, and we changed it for the TV.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. We're staying with this order the rest of the time. I don't care what the format says because it's too confusing for me. All right. So my number eight. Now I'm conceding that I haven't watched the last year and a half, but I can't justify leaving it off my list. The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead. It gave me years and years and years of water cooler conversations and fights over which character should die versus who won't die, and the emotional just draining of certain characters getting killed off and people that you loved. And just really examining the human condition. And I know sometimes it can meander and it takes forever and it, you know, it's probably never going to end, but it was a big part of my life entertainment wise for the better part of a decade. So I can't leave it off. So The Walking Dead.
That would have made my list if it wasn't something that I made a point to abandon. So that's another one of those.
I get it.
I only ever followed the spoilers. So.
All right, Amanda, your turn.
My number 8 is Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
Good pick. Yeah, that almost made me a list. Good pick.
It didn't make your list?
No, it's not. It's,
oh, wow.
It's right outside of it.
I love how he pokes at his corporate daddy, AT&T.
Mm-hmm. I feel like he's much more... Okay, so he reports still facts, but he obviously has his own perspectives, and he makes it all funny. To me, it's finally enjoyable to endure the news of what's going on in our lives in so many different areas, not just politically, but he just tackles so many different things, and he does it in the way that I want to receive that information, where it's not overwhelming and it's not a bias. It's just, here's what it is and here's a way to make fun of it. And he's so smart, and I love how smart he is. But I also, he reminds me of so many people that I love spending time with that are really smart, but they're also great smart asses, and they know how to make a good joke out of anything. So
my first experience with him was from, of course, The Daily Show. And when Jon Stewart left for a little while to go film his movie and he was the host of The Daily Show, it really improved The Daily Show for me. And then my other experiences with him has been through back when I first started listening to podcasts. There's a podcast called The Bugle with him and another guy would do essentially that show on The Bugle. And it was a lot of fun. So yeah, he's smart and he does have the ability of doing everything he does. Sure, he's got a great writing staff behind him now, but he is very interesting to work with. Or not work with, but see.
Yeah, I was going to be like, did you get to work with him?
I was going to say, what have you been hiding
good
from
for
us?
You? Are you leaving us for John Oliver? Because that would be amazing.
Publicity.
Well, you know, I didn't want to break it to you this way. It was a slip of the tongue.
Whatever it takes, man. I get you. Got to be famous. All right, what's your number 7, John?
My number 7 is going to be somewhere on the list for Amanda, too, and that's the 99.
Wow, so low.
Well, it's low because there are so many other things that are that's great true. On my list, but
so much the 99 judgment, Amanda.
Is that...
Jesus.
The 99 is that one show that I have on here that is Mental Floss, where I get to put it on just to enjoy myself for a little bit and not think about things and just have a good time, and I don't have to follow some sort of crazy plot. That's why the 99's here. I do love it. It's been great, and I will stick with that for as long as I possibly can.
99!
Wow, I just heard an echo all the way down the street. my number 7, I don't watch it, so I can't help you there. But it sounds like you guys love it, so good for you. Congrats.
Yeah.
Number 7 is Ozark. It is basically the Breaking Bad of the new generation for me. And it's extremely blue.
So it's like new Coke?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, a little bit. What I mean by it's extremely blue is I mean it's shot extremely blue. The cinematography is extremely bluish. It's almost like Breaking Bad, the Smurf edition in a way. So it's funny in that respect. It's just Jason Bateman's great, and I just love watching this family try to get out of the hell they have put themselves in. And it just keeps getting better. And by the end of the second season, Laura Linney is just firing on all cylinders. And I just can't wait to see what happens next. So that's my number 7. Netflix. Love it.
My number 7 has been covered and established, but it is Barry.
Mm.
And that one was a fun surprise for me. I really enjoyed it. Bill Hader. Wow. It's great.
All right. So my number 6 is a show that unfortunately recently was announced that it's canceled, but it's The OA. Mm. I remember the first time this came on Netflix, when I watched it, I was riveted from the very beginning. I just loved how beautifully it was shot. I loved how the storytelling was happening. I loved even the stranger components of the storytelling. And in season 2, they even pushed it to a much stranger way of telling that story. Britt Marling, this was my first experience with being exposed to what she does. And she's just fantastic. And it turns out she's in a lot of other things that I really love to watch. I didn't realize that she was there in the background, just kind of hiding, being weirdo. But it's... I think it's a magical show. I think it's unfortunate that it's no longer going to be new episodes or anything at all, but I that's why it's in my list.
Great pick for you. I've never seen it. Great pick for you.
Yeah. I wouldn't watch it if I were you, Adam.
I won't. No. I know what it's about.
You shouldn't.
Yeah. I've done a little research. I'm like, nope, I'm out. I'm going to nope right out of this one.
Yeah.
My number six, I'm not going to really elaborate on. I'm just going to say it's Stranger Things. I'm saving my comments because I know it'll be much higher up on John and Amanda's list. So I'll just wait till we get there.
Okay.
Actually, no, it's my number six.
Oh, well, then it'll be way higher up on John's list. So let's just wait till we get to John's.
That's fine.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to number five, John.
My number five is The Haunting of Hill House.
Ah.
I know it only just came out last year or this
great
year.
Show.
Was it this year or last
great show.
Year? The acting in it is phenomenal. The storytelling is phenomenal. And it's one of these things where with a lot of the other shows, when I started watching it, I felt like I was there and I was involved and I was part of the whole thing. And it doesn't happen that often for me anymore, but it's still just a great, beautiful show and shot in a way that more things need to be shot this way.
That's a great one. My number five. Oof. Now, this is going to be one that I think, John, you might have seen it. Amanda, you would never watch it, and you wouldn't like it if you did. But if you're a fan of Star Trek Discovery, I believe is the show, you saw that there was a new captain in season two. Well, he was also in another show called
Hell. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Hell on Wheels.
Yep.
And this is one that former host, you heard him last week, Brian Williams, he was back for a little bit. He recommended this one to me because he knows I like Westerns, and it's pretty much a Western. It takes place around the Civil War, right after the Civil War. And Cullen Bohannon is Anson Mount, and he's working on a railroad, and he's just trying to find someone.
I've been working on the railroad.
There you go. Everything but that song pops up. And it's just him trying to get along on this railroad and deal with all of the burgeoning America. And what it means for him and what it means for the kind of man that he is and really what kind of man is he is really what the show is about. And can he make it on this railroad and can he prosper and become a different kind of person? It's just, it starts off very much like an old Western where this is it's not really lone gunman because there aren't very many gunfights or anything like that, but he starts off as this lone hero and it becomes a show that's a lot deeper than that. And I absolutely loved it. And was riveted by it. And I'm glad we got a proper ending for the characters. Last season wasn't fantastic, but it's a great show. It's a great show. And I loved it.
That's a strong pick. I do love that show.
Thanks, man. There's not many people that have seen it. That was one where I think AMC aired it on Saturdays and nobody watches TV on Saturdays.
Yikes. My number five is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I get so giddy and happy when I watch this show. It's comfort food to me. I did not think I was going to like it when I first started watching it. But given that it was written or created by the same people who did Parks and Rec, I was like, well, I've got to give it a chance. So I watched it, was weird with it at first, and then I couldn't stop watching it. It was just, I binged all of the seasons to catch up within a couple of weeks. I was watching it on every lunch break. I was watching it at any moment that I possibly could. And to this day, I still rewatch episodes and it still makes me laugh. And the Halloween episodes are the best because they're a great special and a little mystery. And I just have so much fun with it. These characters I've grown to love. And one thing that I can say about this show that I can almost never say about a television show is that now that the romantic characters are together, they've been together for a while, so it's not a spoiler, but usually when the leads in a show get together romantically, it destroys the show. That has not happened here. They have found a way to maneuver around that, to maintain it, to even make it stronger, even though some of the prime characters are in a relationship together, are married. I love it.
That's a great pick, and that's why I had it on my list a little while ago, too. So, my number four, I think we're on now, right?
What a sassy man today.
Well, I think his point was made. I'm just going with him on this one.
So, my number four is going to be one of those ones that you're going to stop and go, what in the F are you talking about? But it's okay, because, yeah, sure, I love serialized shows. This is not one of those. This is something that, again, is It's TV floss. It's something where I watch to take my mind off of things and to not think about it. And it's not a lot of heavy lifting, with the exception of it makes me bake. And that's the Great British Bake Off.
Oh my God, that was the longest way to get to that. I was waiting for something really cool and exotic. The Great British Bake Off. All right, then.
You know, there are a lot of people listening to this that are going to agree with Johnny.
I'm not knocking it at all. I'm just, I thought it was going to be something, just a revelation, not something I totally expected.
Well, I had to build it up. There's not much more I could say about it. It's a contest show about baking.
Yeah, it is just baking.
And it inspires me every Thanksgiving to bake.
That's a good point. I think that's the first reality show. I have no reality shows on mine. Anybody, you've got one.
No,
obviously.
I hate reality shows.
Yeah. It's not really reality, is it? My number four is a show that is canceled. And I'm hoping Disney Plus will bring it back, or Marvel will bring it back. Somebody will bring it back. And it's the only one of the Netflix Marvel shows that would have made my top 20 list, really. It's The Punisher. I love what they did with The Punisher. And man, did they bring that character to life in the most brutal, violent, vicious way possible. And they had storylines that were just fascinating, great villains. It's a show I could have watched another 5 seasons of, no problem. And really, by the thing I did like about it the most is that even though it was canceled, the very end of the second season, it gives it the ending I wanted. So I'm perfectly happy and content with how the show ended, which is, at least I can say, if I never get anything else, I've got that. And it's great. John Bernthal, perfect Punisher. He should come back and do him again in something.
He is really great.
I can dig it. I mean, I didn't watch the show, but I can dig it.
God, go watch it, man. It's still on Netflix. It ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I have a mental block when it comes to Punisher.
Is it you hate fun things?
He's just one of those characters that's very much a product of the 90s, and we should just leave those behind.
Okay, I'm going to ignore the guy who just brought a baking show into the greatest TV shows of the last decade. So. I'm not dealing with your yeast. Amanda, what do you got?
The Good Place.
All right.
This is a show that is more creative than it ever should have been. And it's one that continues to move along. It's one that they know where they're going and how they're going to stop it, because it is on its final season. They didn't elongate the story more than it could handle, and it didn't get rid of it after the first season, which would have been really devastating. This is the perfect length for this show. The casting is amazing. The performances are so good and clever in the story. After the first season, I thought the beginning few episodes or half of the first season would just be boring, that I was like, oh, okay, they're in heaven. The twist comes at the very end and I'm like, what? I am absolutely hooked with this show. I cannot believe that I never saw this coming. And it just worked so perfectly. And the story continued to evolve. And I mean, sure, just does it. I love that show.
That's forking great.
Good pick.
See that? I made a joke about they swear.
I got it. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. Oof,
glad people picked up on that. All right, Johnny, top three, number three.
Speaking of people getting forked, my number three, Game of Thrones. I don't think much else needs to be said about that.
Well, I'll be coming back to that one. It ain't going anywhere. People getting forked. You nerd. All right, my number three is Westworld. And the reason why is because it's smart. It's fascinating. And it's one of the shows I can rewatch several. It's very much like Game of Thrones in the way that it tells a story multiple ways. So you go back and you rewatch it and you'll get something else out of it. So it begins as a Western, which I love, and it evolves into something else. I absolutely love that show. It's one of the smartest shows on television. I wish it came on more often, because once every 3 years is kind of getting old. But it's a wonderful show. And they just added Aaron Paul to the cast, so it'll be a great show. Continued.
Hell yeah. My number three is Ozark. Already been mentioned. Ooh. Can't wait to see it again. It was very addicting. Did not think I was going to love it as much as I did. But the timing of when I started watching it was shortly after I finished Breaking Bad. So I think Aaron kind of spoke to the similarities there, and it just rolled with the punches for me.
And just think about it a little deeper. It's Breaking Bad, new decade, and it's shot blue. Like meth? Nobody? Nothing?
Such a dork.
I mean, it was pretty clear that you're going for that the first time around.
Okay, well, I'll just making sure everybody caught it. All right, well, okay. I feel sad now. John, what's your number two?
My number two is something that caught me completely by surprise. It's something that's on Amazon. I just put it on for giggles because I thought, well, you know what? I've been hearing enough good things about this. And after the first episode, I absolutely fell in love with this. I fell in love with the creator and I fell in love with the characters that are in this. And that's Fleabag.
That was really good.
Wow. That's great that you bring that up. The only thing I don't like about it is it's so short. I mean, I guess, you know, a lot of these are really short, but I just, like, what is it, like 12 episodes total? Something like that?
I think it's 16 episodes total, and the second season is just amazing. The adding of...
That's true.
Andrew Scott, I think his name is.
The hotness?
Yeah. Like, that whole thing with him was hysterical, and there's just something about those characters, and the fact that we don't know what the hell her name is, it's just... I mean, there's so many little nuanced things that were just great.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge should get her own category for the Emmys this year. That's what I think. Between that and Killing Eve, I mean, she just like knocked it out of the park. All right, my number two is the story about another cowboy. I'm a big fan of Westerns. And he leaves his hometown a long time ago and has to come back because he likes to shoot people. And when he comes back to town, to his lovely town in Kentucky, he finds his arch nemesis working in the same town and trying to make himself a criminal. And then we follow Raylan Givens as he takes on Boy Crowder in Justified. Mm. That is a show that consistently, season to season to season, won me over with how well it was told, how great the actors were in every facet, how... it evolved, and especially and primarily the friendship / animosity between Raylan and Boyd and how it all ended with probably one of my favorite finales in TV history. We Dug Coal Together, because they just nailed it and, you know, made me cry. Still makes me cry just thinking about it.
Oh,
my heart. All right, Amanda, number two.
My number two... maybe shocking. It's Haunting of Hill House.
No, it was already on John's five, so it doesn't shock me. Yep. Already here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't wait to see what they do with the next story, which is derived from Turn of the Screw, which is another book that I love. And I just feel like Mike Flanagan really has his finger on the pulse of horror television. He knows what he's doing just based off that single season and the movies that he's been doing within this past decade. So it was just so strong. The cinematography was wonderful. The writing was great. The production was great. The casting was great. The performances, everything about it, I just loved and I was enamored with. So it certainly, it hardly... could be beat, except for my number one.
John, this is it.
Well, you knew it was going to be on my list somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's Stranger Things.
Now, number one television show of an entire decade. Why is this one so powerful for you?
Of all the shows on here, this was the one show that when I saw the trailers for, I immediately felt a connection to it. When I saw the first episode, I immediately felt a connection to it. When I saw that all the different characters, like, that connection was there for me. And it sucked me in, and it took me to a magical place that I don't get to go to all that often anymore. And I was just lost. I was just lost in what I saw. And again, the characters are just people that I know. They're parts of me. They're parts of my family. They're all there. And it's so easy to just fall in love with these people. And it just so happens that we get to have a fantastical story with monsters and villains and all these other things to work with, to play with. So, yeah.
I'll add just a little bit. I don't want to add too much to it because I said I would talk about when you brought it up. It was a show I watched because of nostalgia and stayed with because of greatness. The characters won me over. I really was invested in the first couple episodes just because it reminded me of my youth. But by the second or third episode, I just cared about every character involved. And that's a great show. That's a great television show.
I really enjoyed the show, but it wasn't, to me, I didn't connect with it as much until I saw the, once I finally got through the first season. I actually feel like, and I know that I'm in the minority for this, the seasons got better as it progressed. So I would honestly rank them 3-2-1 as being, you know, best to not best, because none of them are bad. It's a great show, and every detail that Johnny has mentioned is certainly valid. It's that's just why it wasn't higher on my list, but I knew it would be at the top of Johnny's. You did a whole podcast on it, so I would hope so.
Yeah, that's true. He's a fan. Okay, my number one is probably no surprise, and I'm sorry, all the hater aid that's been drunk out there. I mean, there's a lot of it. Just keep sipping away, man. I don't care. I enjoyed the last season. I have no complaints. I saw that turn coming. Not surprised. Was kind of wondering if it was going to come earlier. I'm sorry you hated it. I enjoyed the show, and I haven't had that kind of connection over a television show with friends and family and everybody else in probably since Lost, honestly. And that's Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is a show that I was brought into late, like midway through the first season. I didn't quite get what all the hype was. I had to rewatch the damn show, the first season, like 3 times to even understand what the hell was going on. But once I got it, I never wanted to let it go. Even when it ended, I still didn't want to let it go. And I'm content with the ending. Was the writing a little at the end, a little dicey? Sure. Was it bad? No, I just don't think it was. I'm sorry. I really, really love Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I really love it too. And that's why it was on my list too. And again, the way they bought me in, they cut the head off of the main character in the first season.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. Just like, wow, every character is up for grabs.
Yep, it was a train wreck, and I was afraid to see turn away and see who what was going to happen next, or miss what was going to happen next.
Amanda, number one.
Mine is the same. It's Game of Thrones. I am with Aaron. There's no, I don't think any TV show or movie is without any sort of flaw. You can give it a perfect score because it's perfect for you, but everything could have some sort of an adjustment, and Game of Thrones is no exception to that. But it also is one that should not be based on your opinion of the last few episodes of an entire series. That show was captivating. It was riveting. It turned so many corners. You guys already talked about how it made you realign yourself and feel that nobody here is safe. Nobody is just going to survive because they're a lead character. You have no idea what's going to happen. And obviously the books had set some precedent for some of it, but even that, you're like, well, they're already changing things. So anything could realistically happen in this world. And that sets a lot of, it builds a lot of tension in the audience. And everything about that show really was elevated to the next level. So I think it's hard to find anybody who would say that this isn't a TV show that they would consider one of the best in the past decade. And for a lot of them, I think they would still consider it in their top three.
All right. I don't think anybody's going to argue Game of Thrones. Well, no, there are a lot of people who are going to say, no, Game of Thrones fell off at the end, whatever. Moving on. Okay, guys. Well, I'm going to tell you what our listeners picked for their top 10 in movies and TV. And you guys comment if you feel there's a lot of these that are similar, but a lot that aren't. Number 10 is Logan. Ooh, it's a great movie. Number 9 is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Number 8 is Blade Runner 2049.
I don't know how that made it on the list.
People love that movie.
People love that movie.
Yeah, it's pretty much how I felt about it.
Number 7 is Inception. That belongs on this list, I believe. A list. Number 6, Deadpool. Number 5, John Wick. Number 4, The Avengers. Number 3. Three, and wasn't on any of our lists, Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay.
Yep. I had it and I removed it because it's not a personal, and this is part of what I think the complication is, at least that I experienced, is trying to decide what was more important for my list, best or favorite, personal favorite, personal best, versus what film elements are structurally or whatever the best.
I just don't think Mad Max Fury Road, I know people love it. It to me is it's a great movie. It's not a best of decade movie for me.
Mm-hmm.
So. Number 2, Guardians of the Galaxy. Number 1, Avengers Endgame.
Yep.
See, I think Avengers is better to me. I mean, it just, yeah, Avengers Endgame doesn't happen without the first one. So, I don't know.
That's why I didn't choose any sequels or anything on my list as well, because if it falls within that decade, that movie wouldn't make sense if you didn't have the earlier ones. Right. Like, those are the ones that set it up. So,
all right, TV shows, top 10. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, we already talked about it. The joy buzzer of television, The Handmaid's Tale, is number 9. Number 8, The Walking Dead. Number 7, Black Mirror. Oh, that's a good one. Mm. Number 6, mm-hmm. The Boys. Number 5, Ozark. Number 4, Chernobyl. That's on none of our lists, but I didn't have any limited series. But number 3, The Good Place. Number 2, Game of Thrones. And number 1, Stranger Things. I was kind of surprised by that one.
Wow.
And nice. No Mandalorian. Jesus.
Screw that show.
I was waiting for somebody to say that deserved to be in the top 10 of the decade already or something. Don't say screw that show. Don't be that guy. Okay, guys, we are out of here. So that's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Be sure to come back, you know, next week. You can comment on this episode on our Facebook group. Corner, our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.